This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Michaela Lungari. How are you?
Hi, Chris. Hi, it's nice to be here.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Last week we were talking about Prosecco.
Yeah.
We were talking about the different regions in Prosecco and the ladder and the hierarchy of Prosecco, starting out at the big regional blends of DOC, getting into the DOCG wines, Valdobbiadene, Galliano, Azzolo, Rive, and Cartiz, bringing the sort of the big hierarchy. This week, I want to talk a wee bit about some of the winemaking techniques. Last week we touched on the tank method or Charmant Martinotti.
Martinotti.
And we touched on that, and we said it's a tank method wine, secondary fermentation in tank.
Yes.
But that methodology, there's a lot of complexity in that methodology. And I suppose let's start with the question, is there any Prosecco that undergoes autolysis?
Yes.
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 Because autolysis is a process where champagne gets its yeasty, bready notes, and you don't normally think of that. You think of Prosecco as being a fruit-forward style of wine.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Yeah, so it's, I think we can have autolysis in two different specific production types of Prosecco. So let's talk about the tank method. Obviously, the tank method is a production method that was meant to be a very quick and easy way to make a sparkling wine. But then you can have what is the so-called long tank method or the long Charmant method, meaning that once the fermentation has ended, technically you will be able just to put the wine in the bottle and have a Prosecco. But there are a lot of producers nowadays that in order to increase the complexity of the wine itself to get even a creamier texture, they leave the wine in the tank in contact with the lees, the yeast lees, for several weeks or even months. So last week we were talking about Rive Prosecco, and normally the Rive Prosecco are made with the long tank method, meaning that technically after just a few weeks you have the sparkling wine ready to be put on the bottle, but then producer they leave the wine in the tank for 2, 3, 4, some producer even for 6 months, just to increase the complexity and get even a more elegant creamy texture to the wine.
You've got to be careful with that though, because lees, if you have a big thick layer of lees, it does land up going into reduction, doesn't it?
Yes.
So I think they use paddles or something, is that right?
So basically, obviously, the reason why, generally speaking, in commercial Prosecco, they don't do this is because it's a very risky process. And you need to control the process from the start to the very end. And it's very important because on the one hand, you want to add a bit of complexity to, let's say, this higher-end version of Prosecco. But on the other hand, you don't want to change the primary aromas of Gleras, because you don't want to transform a Prosecco in something similar to a traditional method. So it's very important to have the perfect balance. And I must say that this is something very similar. You know, a lot of producers use the word surly when they, after the fermentation is ended, they leave the wine in contact with the yeast just to add a bit of complexity. And in this case, is very, very similar, the idea behind it. So leave the wine, the Prosecco, in contact with its lees for just the amount of time needed to make it more elegant, creamier in texture, but without changing its profile and identity. The second method that is becoming more and more popular, and I think it's mainly due to the fact that organic, vegan, natural wines are becoming more and more popular, is the so-called col fondo Prosecco. Basically, the col fondo Prosecco is the same production method that in France is called Pet Nat, so Petit Jan Naturel. And basically, the col fondo Prosecco is made with a different, completely different production method that is called ancestral method. So basically, as we mentioned last week, In the tank method, you have the primary fermentation, so you crush the grapes, you have the base wine, and then you add yeast and sugar, and you have the secondary fermentation inside the tank. In the Colfondo Prosecco, you only have one fermentation. So basically, you crush the grapes, the wine is fermenting, and when the wine is still a tiny bit sweet, you put the wine in the bottle. Normally, you close it with the crown cap. Then, during the winter, everything stops. And then, the next spring, when the temperature, you know, is warming up in the cellar, the yeast inside the wine, because I want to remember, Colfondo means in Italian wheat sediment, meaning that you put the wine in the bottle with the yeast and everything, the fermentation yeast and sediments. So the next spring, when the temperature in the cellar warms up, basically you have the yeast inside the bottle that they start to finish up the fermentation. So you get a Prosecco that is not technically sparkling, is semi-sparkling, or like we call it in Italy, frizzante. And basically, you only have one fermentation. So this is very important because you are not adding anything else to the wine. You are not adding yeast and sugar. So you are able to preserve even more the primary aromas of Glera. You obviously have a bit of autolysis notes, of yeasty notes, but at the same time, so you have a Prosecco that is bone dry, because obviously you don't have residual sugar inside the bottle. So it's quite an extreme version of Prosecco, and I found it funny, because every time I have to describe the Colfondo Prosecco, I always tend to use the word extreme, because compared to the Prosecco, the spumante we drink mostly, it's completely different. But then we need to remember the Colfondo Prosecco is old-fashioned way to make Prosecco. So before even the Charmat method, the tank method was invented, the Prosecco locally was made like this.
Oh, really? I wasn't sure about the history of Prosecco. So they have been making Prosecco before the tank method was
so
invented.
Actually, the history of Prosecco is very, very interesting, because Prosecco actually, many, many years ago, so 150, 200 years ago, was actually a still wine. So locally, they were producing a still white wine made from Prosecco grapes. Then they noticed that obviously Glera, the Prosecco grapes, had a huge potential making frizzante wines. And obviously back then the only way to make a frizzante wine, a sparkling wine, was to have just a bottle condition, like we have for many beers or ciders, no? Where you just leave the yeast inside the bottle, and then you finish the fermentation inside the bottle. And so actually we transition from a still white wine made from Prosecco grapes, was a very light-bodied wine, from a frizzante wine made with this Colfondo, Petnat, ancestral method. And then, as soon as technology arrived, they obviously immediately understood that Prosecco grapes were an extremely good candidate for the tank method. And so from that moment, they started to use the tank method. But yes, the transition, the historical transition of Prosecco was like this. And I must say something very interesting for the wine nerds. In the DOCG Valdobbiaden appellation, since 3 years ago, they have allowed producer to make still Prosecco. So now, now you can find Valdobbiaden and DOCG Prosecco in the still version that a lot of people think it was just a marketing material, but actually for people that know the history of Prosecco, that Prosecco is where Prosecco was at the very, very beginning of its journey.
Okay, the ancestral Prosecco, what do you call it?
Colfondo.
You said that wine's a Fizanti, which is a lower, light, yes, you know, heavy spritz or lightly.
Exactly.
Why don't they make it in a Spumante style?
Because basically, in this kind of production method, as I mentioned, you need to leave a bit of sugars inside the wine during the fermentation, and then you finish off the fermentation inside the bottle. In particular, with this production method, if you wanted to make a spumante, you will need to leave much more sugar in the wine before.
That's right.
And this is extremely risky, because the risk of... Yes, yes, exactly. So the risk of explosion in the cellar will be very high, and maybe you will end up on maybe 1,000 bottles. Only 200 of them would make it through the spring. So actually, I think at the very beginning, probably they started leaving a bit more residual sugar. Then they noticed that oh, wow, we have nothing left now. So they decreased the level of residual sugar. And now they basically, what they leave is the amount needed to make a frizzante that for people that are not aware of this style, just think about something between a still wine and a sparkling wine, exactly something in between. Yeah. And it's very nice in terms of style because obviously it has very fine bubbles. It's very dry. So, for instance...
it's quite creamy, I find.
Yeah, yeah, very creamy.
Moscato d'Asti is quite often a frizzante.
Yes, and it's very nice. I would say if you go locally in the Prosecco region, in Val d'Obbiadene, and you go to the local osterias, you will see the local mostly drinking this type of Prosecco. Would be very unlikely to see them drinking the spumante because traditionally they drink this kind of Prosecco. And I must say, when even our customers are intrigued by this style and they try it, I normally recommend to try it with a cheese board or a charcuterie board or a cheese and charcuterie board. And it's just the perfect wine for that kind of matching because you have at the same time this creamy texture, these very fine bubbles, a very good acidity, no residual sugar, so you're not changing the taste of the cheeses of the charcuterie, and it's just very, very easy to drink.
Do you find you get many autolic notes? Because these wines, they could lie on that dead yeast for quite some time picking up autolysis, or are they drunk quite quickly when they're quite young?
Yeah, so generally speaking, they tend to be put on the market quite young, so you have a tiny bit of autolytic nose, but not that much, because normally it's very easy for you to drink a Colfondo Prosecco that has been left in the bottle with the yeast maybe for 6 months. So it's not enough to get that kind of complexity you would expect from, let's say, a traditional method. But then one thing that is very nice about the Colfondo Prosecco is the fact that if you visit some of the artisan producer, they can offer you a vertical tasting of a Colfondo Prosecco. And in the past, I tried the Colfondo Prosecco that were 8, 10, even 12 years old. And then it's where you get a lot of this kind of yeasty bakery notes. And it's nothing compared to what we will get from, let's say, a vintage champagne, because we still have the fruity notes of Glera, this pear and white apple. But while, let's say, on a young Prosecco, you always have these notes of fresh pear and fresh apple, on a 10 years old Colfondo Prosecco, you would have like apple pie, for instance. So it's quite intriguing. And the Colfondo Prosecco are the best candidates if you want to have a vertical tasting of Prosecco, because then from the young Colfondo to the old vintages, you will see a huge difference, and they tend to age very well.
The other thing that's a little bit unusual about Prosecco is we talked about the Confondo, and they're bone dry because
yes,
all the sugar is converted into alcohol, but you do get all levels of sweetness in your Proseccos.
Yeah.
And normally with champagne, if you're making a champagne, what you do is you finish your fermentation, and then as you're removing the dead yeast, you just pour in shed loads of sugar to make it sweet.
Yeah.
But a lot of Prosecco producers don't do that, do they?
Yeah, so basically, when you add the yeast and sugars to start the secondary fermentation...
So we're talking about a normal Prosecco, not
yeah,
a Confondo.
Exactly. You know exactly the amount of sugar you need to add in order to just have a sparkling wine. And then any additional gram you add at the very beginning of the secondary fermentation is going to be left at the very end. Okay? So basically, nowadays, what a lot of Prosecco producers are doing, they are moving forward in terms of styles. And while Prosecco absolutely became famous for the extra dry style, which to remember is means that you have a sparkling wine normally with around 12, 13, 14, even 16 grams per liter of residual sugar.
About a brew, really, isn't it?
Exactly. In this case, we have now producer going into drier style, because in this way, obviously, you are able to create a Prosecco that is much easier to drink. And I know a lot of people, they normally ask for a bit of residual sugar because they maybe like a bit of residual sugar in their wines. But generally speaking, the residual sugar is always making a wine a bit heavy to drink, while the drier the Prosecco in this case, and the easier it is to drink. So it's much more common now to find Prosecco DOC from Treviso, or obviously the Valdobbiadene and DOCG and Asolo, made in the Brut, extra Brut, or even now we have some producer making the Prosecco in the so-called Brut Nature, meaning that we have 0 gram per liter of residual sugar, like we have in the Colfondo, but using the tank method, okay, so a traditional spumante. This is very, very important because the use of sugar, at least what I found out, the use of sugar, residual sugar in Prosecco, if you want to have a quality Prosecco, you just need to leave the sugar needed to balance the acidity in order to create a beautiful balance on your palate and to make a very easy drinking fizz. If you leave something more, you just create something very heavy. And if you leave something less, then you create something that can be on the sour side, because Glera is a great variety with very high acidity. So once again, it's very important to find the Prosecco made by people that normally know the vineyards very well, and they know even how to blend the different vineyards they own in order to make a Prosecco balance on its own without the need of actually leaving or adding, as you mentioned before, sugars.
But the process of having that residual sugar in the final wine, they don't add it while bottling. Do you want to touch on that?
Yeah, exactly. So in the traditional or champenoise method, basically when you do the disgorgement at the very end, you are left basically with some a part of the bottle that is empty. And then they actually add the so-called liqueur d'expedition that normally, as you mentioned before, is like a blend of sugar with other things. I mean, there are some producers adding even a little bit of branding or cognac, and then it's like a secret recipe. And yes, in the liqueur d'expedition, there is the addition of sugar, and in the traditional method is where you get the style of your champagne by the amount of sugar you add at the very end of the bottling process. In Prosecco, you don't do that, because actually when the wine is in the tank, then it basically directly goes in the bottle. So you don't have an intermediate process like you have in the traditional method. So the residual sugar left in the tank after the secondary fermentation is what you have naturally in the bottle. And the only way to manage this is by adding a specific amount of sugar at the start of the secondary fermentation. So you don't add, like you mentioned, the sugar at the end of the process, basically when you bottle the wine. In this case, you add the sugar basically in between, in the middle part of the process.
And the key thing here is that you've got to stop that extra sugar once it's in the bottle fermenting. So it's the wine on the way through to bottling, it has to go through sterile bottling,
yes,
sterile filtration,
yes,
to remove any yeast,
yes,
any yeast there. Because if you don't take that yeast out, you're going to land up with a Prosecco.
Boom. Yes.
Boom.
With a bomb, a Prosecco bomb. Yeah, so it's very important, because obviously sugar is what yeast use during the alcoholic fermentation. So if you still have yeast left in the bottle and you also have sugar, then is the perfect storm, because at the moment when you have the correct condition in terms of temperature, obviously you are going to have another fermentation starting inside the bottle, and then when you open the bottle, yes, it's going to be fireworks.
It's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, Michaela, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you to all the listeners. Thank you very much.
And just so we know, for a bit of a plug for your business, what's the name of the business?
So the company is Hey Wines, and we have also a website, heywines.co.uk. So if you want more information about Prosecco, or check actually all the different styles of Prosecco we describe in these 2 weeks, you can find all the information there.
Great. And you've got all these different styles?
Yes, UK? Yes.
Lovely. All right, cheers, mate.
Thank you very much, Chris. Bye.
Bye.